Disclosure. Socrates poisoned again after 25 centuries. Responses to questions from disciples and press correspondents given in Crete, Greece. Discourse number 13.
Social rules seem to be a basic need for human beings. Yet no society has ever helped man to realize himself. Can you please explain what kind of relationship exists between individuals and society, and how they can help each other to evolve?
It is a very complex question. But very fundamental too. Only man in the whole existence needs rules. No other animal needs any rules. The first thing has to be understood that there is something artificial about rules. And the reason why man needs them is that man has left being an animal and yet he has not become human. He is in a limbo. That is the need of all the rules. If he was an animal, there was no need. Animals live perfectly well without any rules, constitutions, laws, courts. If man really becomes man, not only in the name, but in reality. Very few people have realized that up to now. For example, for a man like Socrates, Zarathustra, Bodhidharma, there is no need of any rules. They are alert enough not to do any harm to anybody. There is no need for any laws, for any constitutions. If the whole society evolves to be authentically human, there will be love, but there will not be law. The problem is that man needed rules, laws, governments, courts, armies, police force, because he has lost his natural behavior of being an animal, and he has not gained another natural status again. He is just in between. He is nowhere. He is a chaos. To control that chaos, all these things are needed. The problem becomes more complex, because these forces which were evolved, religions, states, courts, to control man, became so powerful, they had to be given power, otherwise how they will control? So he fell into a slavery on our own. Once they became powerful, now they don't want to drop their wasted interest. They don't want men to evolve. You are asking me how men and the society, individual and the society, can evolve. You do not understand the problem at all. If individual evolves, society dissolves. The society exists only because individual is not allowed to evolve. And now all these powers for centuries have been controlling men and enjoying their power, their prestige. They are not ready to let men evolve, to let men grow to a point where they become useless. And there are many situations which will help you to understand the situation. It happened in China 25 centuries ago. A Lao Tzu became very famous as a wise man, and he was, without any doubt, one of the wisest men ever. The Emperor of China asked him very humbly to become his chief of the Supreme Court, because nobody can guide the country's laws better than him. He tried to persuade the emperor that I am not the right man. But the emperor was insistent. Lao Tzu said, if you don't listen to me, just one day in the court and you will be convinced that I am not the right man, because the system is wrong. Out of humbleness, I was not saying the truth to you. Either I can exist, or your law and your order and your society can exist. So let us try it. And the first day, a thief was brought in the court who has stolen almost half of the treasure of the richest man in the capital. Lao Tzu listened to the case and then he said that the thief and the richest man both should go to jail for 6 months. The rich man said, "What are you saying? I have been stolen. I have been robbed. And what kind of justice is this that you are sending me to jail? For the equal time than you are giving to the thief?" Lao Tzu said, "I am being certainly unfair to the thief. You need more to be in jail, because you have collected so much money, deprived so many people of money. The thousands of people are dying and you are collecting and collecting money for what? Your very greed is creating these thieves. You are responsible. The first crime is yours. Lao Tzu's logic is absolutely clear. If there is going to be too many poor people and few rich people, you cannot stop thieves. You cannot stop stealing. The only way to stop it is to have a society where everybody has enough to fulfill his needs and nobody has unnecessary accumulation just out of greed." The rich man said, "Before you send me to jail, I want to see the emperor, because this is not according to the constitution, this is not according to the law of the country." Lao Tzu said, "That is the fault of the constitution and the fault of the law of the country. I'm not responsible for it. You can see the emperor." And the rich man said to the emperor, "Listen to me, this man should be immediately deposed from his post. He is dangerous. Today I am going into jail, tomorrow you will be in jail." If you want to save yourself, this man has to be thrown out. He is absolutely dangerous and he is very rational. What he is saying is right, I can understand it. But he will destroy us. And the king understood it perfectly well, that if this rich man is a criminal, that I am the greatest criminal in the country. And Lao Tzu will not hesitate to send me to jail. He was relieved of his post. He said, "I have told you before, unnecessarily wasting my time. I was saying I am not the right man. The reality is your society, your law, your constitution are not the right constitution, not the right law. You need wrong people to run this whole wrong system. The problem is that the forces that we had created to keep men not to fall apart into chaos are now so powerful, they don't want to leave you free to grow. Because if you are capable of growing, becoming an individual, alert, aware and conscious, there will be no need of all these people. They will lose all their jobs, and with their jobs, their prestige, their power, their leadership, their priesthood, their popehood, everything will be gone. So now those who were in the beginning needed to protect have turned into the enemies of humanity. My approach is not to fight against these people because they are powerful. They have armies, they have money, they have everything. You cannot fight with them. You will be destroyed. The only way out of this mess is silently start growing your own consciousness, which they cannot prevent by any force. In fact, they cannot even know what is going on inside you. I give you the alchemy of inner transformation. Change your inner being and the moment you are changed, completely transformed, you will suddenly see you are out of the imprisonment. You are no more a slave. You were a slave because of your chaoticness. It happened in Russian Revolution. The day revolution succeeded, one woman started walking in Moscow in the middle of the road. The policeman said, "This is not right. You cannot walk in the middle of the road." The woman said, "Now we are free. Even if you are free, you will have to follow the rules of traffic, Otherwise, traffic will become impossible. If cars and people are running everywhere they want, turning wherever they want, don't take any note of the lights, people will be simply getting into accidents, being killed. This will bring the army in to enforce the law, that you have to walk to the right or to the left, whichever is chosen by a country, but nobody can walk in the middle. Then on the point of a gun you have to follow. I always remember that woman. She is very symbolic. Freedom does not mean chaos. Freedom means more responsibility. So much responsibility that nobody needs interfere in your life. That you have to be left alone. That the government need not interfere in you. That the police need not interfere with you. That the law has nothing to do with you. You are simply out of their world. This is my approach. If you really want to transform humanity, each individual should start growing on his own. And in fact, a crowd is not needed for growth. Growth is something like a child growing in a mother's womb. No crowd is needed. Just the mother has to be careful. A new man has to be born in you. You have to become the womb of a new man. Nobody will come to know about it. And it is better that nobody knows about it. You simply go on doing your ordinary work, living in the ordinary world, being simple and ordinary, not becoming revolutionaries, reactionaries, punks and skinheads. That is not going to help. That is sheer stupidity. It is out of frustration. But still it is insane. The society is insane, and out of frustration you become insane. The society is not afraid of these people. The society is afraid only people who can become so centered, so conscious, that their laws become useless for them. They always do the right. They are beyond the grip of the so-called powerful interest. And if individuals grow, society will diminish. The way we have known society, with the government, with the army, with the courts, with the policemen, with the jails, this society will diminish. Certainly, because there are so many human beings, new forms of collectivity will come into being. I would not like to call them society, just to avoid the confusion between the words. I call the new collectivity a commune. The word is significant. It means where people are not only living together, but where people are in deep communion. To live together is one thing. We are doing it. Every city, every town, thousands of people are living together. But what togetherness is there? People don't know even their neighbors. They live in the same skyscrapers, thousands of people, and they never come to know that they are living in the same house. It is not togetherness, because there is no communion. It is simply crowd, not a community. So I would like to replace the word society with the word commune. The society has existed on certain basic principles. You will have to remove them, otherwise the society will not disappear. The first and the most important unit of the society has been the family. If the family remains the way it is, then the society cannot disappear. Then the church cannot disappear. Then religions cannot disappear. Then we cannot create one world, one humanity. The family is psychologically out of date. It is not that it was always there. There was a time there was no family. People lived in tribes. Family came into existence because of private property. There were powerful people who managed to have more private property than anybody else, and they wanted it to be given to their children. Up to now there was no question. Men and women were meeting out of love. There was no marriage and no family. But once property came into existence, the man became very possessive of the woman. He turned the woman also part of the property. In Indian languages, the woman is called property. In China, the woman has become so much a property that even if a husband killed his wife, there is no law against him. No crime is committed. You are absolutely free to destroy your property. You can burn your furniture, you can burn your house. It is not a crime, it is your house. You can kill your wife. With the private property, the woman also became private property. And every strategy was used so that the man can be absolutely certain that the child that is born from his wife is really his own. Now this is one of a difficult problem. Father can never be absolutely certain. Only mother knows. But the father created every kind of barrier for the movement of the woman so that she cannot come into contact with other men. All possibilities and all doors are closed. It is not a coincidence that in your churches and temples only old women go, because that is the only place they were allowed to go. Knowing perfectly well that church is defensive of family. The church knows perfectly well that once family is gone, church is gone. And church, of course, is the last place where some romantic affair can happen. And they have made every certainty the priest has to be celibate. These are guarantees that the priest is celibate, that he is against sex, that he is against women, in different religions, in different ways. The Jaina monk cannot touch a woman. In fact, the woman should not come more close than 8 feet than the Jaina monk. The Buddhist monk is not allowed to touch a woman. There are religions which don't allow women to enter into their religious places, or they have separate partitions. Man has the main part, the woman has a small corner, but separated, the man cannot even see them. Meeting is impossible. Many religions like Mohammedanism has covered their women's faces. The Mohammedan women's faces had become pale because they never see the sunlight. Their whole body is covered, their face is covered. In every possible way, the woman is not to be educated, because education gives people a strange kind of thought. People start thinking, people start arguing. The woman was not allowed to have any financial career, because that means independence. So she was cut from every nook and corner, just for a simple reason. So that you are certain that your son is really your son. Those who were really powerful, for example kings, they had male servants castrated. Because they were moving in the palace, working, serving, they had to be castrated, otherwise there is danger. And there was danger, because every emperor had hundreds of wives, many of whom he will never see. Naturally, they will fall into love with anybody. But only castrated men were allowed into the palace. So even if you fall in love, you cannot create children. And that was the basic thing. Family has to disappear and to give place to a commune. A commune means that we have pooled all our energies, all our money, everything into a single pool, which will be taking care of all the people. The children will belong to the commune. So there is no question of individual heritage. And it is so economical, because I have seen in my commune 5,000 people were there. That means if they were living separately, then 2,500 kitchens would have been needed, and 2,500 women would be wasting their life in the kitchen. There was only one kitchen for 5,000 people, and only 15 people was running it. And remember, every woman is not a good cook. In fact, the best cooks are always men. All the books on cookery are written by men. And in all the great hotels, you will find the best cooks are men. But 2,500 people cannot afford the best cook separately. But 5,000 people's commune can afford the best cook, the best food. It can afford doctors to look into what they are eating and whether it is junk or food. Most people are eating junk. The food to be right has to be medically decided. In my commune, 15 people were preparing the food, doctors were looking at it, its hygiene, its cleanliness, and its nutritious value. It should be nutrition that should be valuable. Flavor is a small thing. It can be given to any kind of food. Good flavor. You need not eat junk just for flavor. And if you eat junk, sooner or later you are going to become junk. And there are so many junkies all around. If you open their heads, you will find ice cream. Nothing else. It's spaghetti. You need a very proportionate, calculated food to keep all your needs completely fulfilled. To keep you food that helps consciousness to grow. To give you food that makes you more loving, more peaceful. To give you food that destroys your anger, your hatred. Because it is your chemistry that food changes. And all these things, anger, hatred, love, compassion, are connected with your chemistry. A chemist should be there to look what kind of food is being given to people. And if you pool all your energies and all your money and all your resources, every commune can be rich. And every commune can enjoy being alive equally. Once individuals are growing and communes are growing side by side, society will disappear. And with society, all the evils that the society has created. I will give you an example. It was only in China that a tremendously revolutionary step was taken 2000 years before. It was that the doctor has to be paid by the patient while the patient remains healthy. If he falls sick, then the doctor has not to be paid. That looks very strange. We pay the doctor when we are sick, and he makes you healthy again. But this is dangerous, because you are making the doctor dependent on your sickness. Sickness becomes his interest. The more people fall sick, the more he can earn. his interest becomes not health, but sickness. If everybody remains healthy, then the doctor will be the only one who will be sick. They made a revolutionary idea practical, that every man has his physician. While he remains healthy, he has to pay the doctor every month. And it is the duty of the doctor to keep him healthy. And naturally, he will keep him healthy because he is being paid for it. If he falls sick, he loses money. When there are epidemics, the doctor goes bankrupt. Right now, it is just the opposite. The doctor, I have heard the story, came to Mullah Nasruddin and said, "You have not paid. And I have been again and again coming that I treated your child of smallpox. And you don't listen." Mullah said, "You listen better. Otherwise, I am going to sue you in the court." The doctor said, "This is strange. I treated your child." He said, "Yes, that I know. But who spread the epidemic in the whole town? My child. And all the money that you have earned." "You have to divide it with me." He was right. His child has done a great job. And since that day, the doctor never came back again to ask for the treatment that he has given to the child. It was right. His argument was correct. He has earned enough out of the epidemic. But this is a very wrong system. The commune should pay the doctor to keep the commune healthy. And if anybody falls sick in the commune, the doctor's salary is cut. So health is the business of the doctor, not sickness. And you can see the difference. In the West, the doctor's business is called medicine, which relates to sickness. In the East, it is called Ayurveda, which means the science of life, not of sickness. The basic business of the doctor should be that people should live long, should live healthy, whole, and he should be paid for it. So each commune can afford it very easily to keep the doctors, the plumbers, the engineers, whatever is needed. That is the commune's responsibility to take care, and the people who serve the commune should be rotating, so there is no power arising again. The committee of the commune should be a rotation. So every year new people are coming in and old people are going out. So nobody becomes addicted of power. Power is the worst drug that addicts people. It should be given, but in very small doses and not for a long time. Let the individual grow and let the commune grow, and forget all about society and don't fight with it. Don't even say that we are creating an alternative society. We have nothing to do with the society. Let the society go on as it is. If it wants to live, it will have to change its mode, its form, its structure, and it will have to become a commune. If it wants to die, let it die. There is no harm. The world is too much overpopulated. It needs only 1/4 of its population. So the old rotten heads who cannot conceive anything new, who are absolutely blind and cannot see that what they are doing is harmful and poisonous, if they have decided to die, then let them die silently. Don't disturb them. So I don't teach you to be rebellious and to be revolutionaries. I want you to be very silent almost underground transformers, because all the revolutions have failed. Now the only possible way is that we should do it so silently and so peacefully that it can happen. And there are things which happen only in silence. For example, if you love trees, you should not take the rose bush every day to look at its roots. otherwise you will kill it. Those roots have to remain hidden. Silently they go on doing their work. My people have to be just like roots, silently go on doing the work, changing yourself, changing anybody who is interested. It's spreading the methods that can change, creating small pools, small groups, small communes, and wherever possible, bigger communes. But let this whole thing happen very silently. Without creating any upheaval. The individual can exist only if society dies. They both cannot coexist. And it is time for the society to be dead. And we will found new ways of togetherness, which will not be formal, which will be more of the heart. Family prevents it. Family draws a boundary around every child. It says, I am your father, so love me. I am your mother, so love me. This is your family. If there is need, sacrifice yourself for the family. The same idea is projected on a bigger scale as nation. This is your nation. If it needs you, sacrifice yourself. It is society, family, nation. It is the same idea becoming bigger and bigger. So my basic attack is on the family. The family is the root cause of all our problems. Our poverty, our sickness, our madness, our emptiness, our lovelessness, the family is the cause. And the family is the cause of all our conditioning. From the very beginning, it starts conditioning your mind that you are a Jew, you are a Christian, you are a Hindu, you are this and you are that. And the poor child does not know what nonsense you are talking about. I have heard about a rabbi and a bishop. They lived in front of each other, and naturally they were continuously competing about everything. It was a question of the prestige of their religion. And one morning, the rabbi saw the bishop has got a new car. He asked, "What are you doing?" The bishop was pouring water over the car. He says, "I am baptizing, I have got a new car." It is Cadillac. The rabbi was heartbroken, seeing in his own, with his own eyes, in his own house front door, a car is being made Christian. Next day when the bishop came out, he was surprised. He asked the rabbi, "What are you doing?" A beautiful Rolls Royce was standing. And the rabbi was cutting the exhaust pipe. He said, "I'm circumcising my Rolls Royce. Now it is you." This is they are doing with every child. And every child is as innocent as Cadillac and Rolls Royce. He does not know what is being done to him. The family is the ground of all conditioning. It gives you in inheritance the whole past and the load, the burden of all those things which have been proved wrong for hundreds of years. And you are loaded with all those wrong things, and your mind is closed and clogged, and it cannot receive anything new that goes against your mind, and your mind is simply full of wrong things. If the children are in the hands of the commune, I have experimented it and found it immensely successful. The children are far more happier, because they are far more freer. No conditioning is stamped on them. They mature more early, because nobody is trying to make them dependent, so they become independent. Nobody is trying out of the way to help them, so they have to learn how to help themselves. This brings maturity. Clarity. a certain strength. And they are all meditating, because meditation is not a conditioning. It is simply sitting silently, doing nothing, just enjoying the silence. The silence of the night, the silence of the early morning. And slowly, slowly you become acquainted of the silence that pervades in your inner being. Then the moment you close your eyes, you fall into the pool of a silent lake, which is fathomless. And out of that silence you are rejuvenated every moment. Out of that silence comes your love, comes your beauty, comes a special depth to your eyes. A special aura to your being, a strength to your individuality, and a self-respect.
Individual freedom and authority on one side, and authoritarianism and dictatorship on the other side, move man's life into his aspirations. Please comment on this.
It is the same problem, the same question, paraphrased differently. The society is authoritarian. The church is authoritarian. The educational system is authoritarian. They all say whatever we say is right. And you need not question it. You have simply to follow. And there are problems, for example, in educational system. I have been a student, I have been a professor, and I know that for the best part of life of a person is being ruled by authoritarian people in the schools, in the colleges, in the universities. I was expelled from many colleges for the simple reason because I could not accept any authoritarianism. I said that you prove it, and I am ready to accept it, but without proving it, without giving right arguments for it, without making it a rational statement, I am not going to accept it. and I was fighting in every subject, because in every subject the teachers were simply lecturing, students were taking notes, because all that was needed to repeat in the examination papers what the teachers had been telling them. And the better you repeat exactly like a parrot, the more credit you get. And on small things, they were in difficulty to prove. And it became embarrassing to them, because every day it was a question. Anything they will say, and I will stand up immediately. And I was asking relevant questions, that on what grounds? For example, one of the professors who was teaching me religions, made the statement that Vedas, the Hindu holy scriptures, are written by God. I had to stand up. I said, I object. In the first place, you have not been able to prove the existence of God. In the second place, now you are saying that these books, which are full of rubbish, are written by God. Have you ever looked into the Vedas? I asked him. Have you ever read from the first page to the last page? There are four Vedas. Big volume. Because I have brought all the four with me. And at random I can open and read. And let the whole class decide whether this is a statement which God can write. Vedas are full of prayers. Now God cannot pray. To whom He will be praying? And prayers of such stupid things that it is simply ridiculous to say that they are written by God. One Brahmin is praying that I have been continuously doing all the rituals, living according to the scriptures, and you have not still given a child to me. Give me a child. That will be a proof that my prayers have been heard. I asked him, in what way this passage God can write? It is written by someone addressed to God, but it cannot be written by God Himself. And if this is the situation of God, then that poor fellow should not be bothered about. He is asking about a child from somebody else. So why we should not ask to the same source? Why we should bother this poor fellow? Their only answer was finally that every college will reject me. The principal will say that we are sorry, we know you are right, but we have to run the college. You will destroy the whole institution. Professors are threatening to resign. Students are saying that you don't allow the professors to teach, because on a single point every day the whole period is lost. 8 months have passed and the course will not be finished in the coming 2 months if the same thing continues. They have come here to pass examinations. They are not interested in truth. They are not interested in the validity of any statement. Their only reason to be here is to get a certificate. And you are a strange fellow. You don't seem to be interested in certificates. I said, I am not interested at all in certificates. What I will do with certificates of these people who don't know anything? I cannot think of these people to be my examiners. The day you give me the certificate, I will store it immediately before you. Because these people can't answer, but the whole system is geared in that way. When I became a professor myself, I had to make a new arrangement. And the arrangement was that in 40-minute period, 20 minutes I will teach the syllabus as it is written in the book, and 20 minutes I will criticize it. My students said, we will go mad. I said, that is your problem. But I cannot leave these statements without criticism. You can choose. You can, when your examination comes, you can choose to write whichever you want. If you want to fail, choose my part. If you want to pass, choose the first part. I am making it clear. I am not deceiving anybody. But I cannot go on deceiving you by teaching something which I think is absolutely wrong. The Vice Chancellor finally had to call me and said to me that this is a strange type of teaching. I have been receiving every day reports that half the time you teach the syllabus and half the time you have your own arguments which destroy the whole thing that you have taught them. So they come as empty as they had gone in. In fact, more in a mess. I said, I am not worried about anybody. what they have done with me all these years when I was a student. I was expelled from one college to another college. And you can come one day and listen whether I am doing any injustice to the prescribed course. When I teach the prescribed course, I do as totally as possible to make it clear he came one day and he listened, and after 20 minutes he said, that is really great. I have been also a student of philosophy, but nobody has ever told me this way. I said, this is only the half part. You just wait, because now I am going to destroy it completely, step by step. And when I destroyed it completely, he said, my God, now I can understand what the poor students are reporting to me. You are not supposed to be a professor in this structure of education. I can understand that what you are doing is absolutely honest. But this system does not create people of intelligence. This system only creates people of good memory. And that's what is needed. We need clerks, we need station masters, we need postmasters. And these people don't need intelligence. They need good memory. I said, in other words, you need computers, not men. If this is your educational system, then sooner or later you are going to replace men by computers, and that's what they are doing. Everywhere they are replacing important positions by computers, because computers are more reliable. They are just memory, no intelligence. Man, however repressed, but he has a certain intelligence. The man who dropped atom bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, if it was a computer, there was no question. At exact time, at exact mileage, it would have dropped the bomb, returned back. It was simply mechanical. But the man who is dropping the bomb, howsoever ever you may have destroyed his intelligence, has to think twice what he is doing. Killing 100,000 people who are absolutely innocent, who are civilians, who are not army people, who have not done any harm to anybody. Is it right? Now everywhere all nuclear weapons are in the hands of computers, not in the hands of men. The computers will fight the Third World War. Men will be killed, that is another matter. Computers don't care whether humanity survives or disappears. It does not matter to them. But they will do exact and efficient work which man cannot do. He may hesitate in destroying the whole humanity. Something of intelligence, just a little bit of intelligence, is enough to create the question, what I am doing. All our institutions, our religions are authoritarian. They don't tell you why. Just do it, because it is written in the book, because Jesus says so. Jesus has not given a single argument why it should be done. He has not given a single rational ground. For any of his doctrines, neither Moses has done that, nor Krishna. Krishna simply says to Arjuna that this is from God, that you have to fight. This is authoritarianism. And God is used, manipulated in every situation to make whatever you are saying absolutely unquestionable. We have to destroy all authoritarianism in the world. Authority is totally different. Authoritarianism is connected with the society, with the church. Authority is something which is concerned with the individual realization. If I say something to you, I say it with authority. This simply means I am saying it because this is my experience, but it does not mean that you have to believe it. It is enough that you listened it. Now you can think over it. You can decide for or against. And to me, what is important is not that you decide far. What is important to me that you decide on your own. It may be against it, it doesn't matter. But the decision should come from your own being. If it doesn't come from your own being, then you are making me authoritarian. I am speaking from my authority. Please don't change me into an authoritarian, because I am simply stating the fact with as much force and fire as I am capable of, so that it is absolutely clear to you. And now you are free to decide. I am not deciding for you. And I am not asking you to have faith in me or belief in me. I am simply asking, give me a little chance. Think what I am saying to you. And I will be grateful that you thought about it. That's enough. Your thinking will give you a sharper intelligence. And I trust in intelligence. If you think and your intelligence becomes sharper, I know whatever you conclude will be right. And even if you conclude wrong one time, it doesn't matter. One has to fall many times and rise up again. That's how life is. One has to commit mistakes and learn from them. And change every blocking rock into a stepping stone. But around me there is no question of any belief or faith. With individual freedom, authoritarianism dies, and a new thing arises, authority. Each individual is capable of having experiences of his own. Then he has authority. Then he can say, I have seen it. I have tasted it. I have enjoyed it. I have danced it. And it is not a question that I am quoting from some scripture. I am simply opening my heart to you. Authority belongs to experience. Authoritarianism belongs to somebody else, not to you. Hence it creates a slavery, not freedom. And to me, freedom is the ultimate value. Because only in freedom you can blossom. and you can blossom to your fullest possibility.
Is society a real fact determined by the existence of man, or is it a false concept, a conditioning which exists only because man is not human?
It is not an existential reality. It is created by man, because man is asleep, because man is in a chaos, because man is not capable to have freedom, without turning it into licentiousness, because man is not capable of having freedom and not taking advantage of it. So it is an artificial but necessary creation of man. Because it is artificial, it can be dissolved. Because it was necessary once, it does not mean it has to be necessary forever. Just man has to change those conditions which made it necessary. And it is good that it is not existential, otherwise there was no way to get rid of it. It is our own manufactured thing. We can destroy it any day we want.
How to evolve out of the collectivity, the nation, without falling into the barbarity of single egos fighting against each other?
Your all questions are centered on one thing. I would like you to give one answer. I am reminded of a parable. A great master was sitting on the seashore on the beach. And a man who was seeking for truth came to him, touched his feet and asked, "If I am not disturbing you, I would like to do something that you suggest, which can help me to find the truth." The master simply closed his eyes and remained silent. the man shook his head. He said, in his own mind, this man seems to be crazy. I'm asking him a question and he's closing his eyes. He shook the man and said, what about my question? He said, I had answered it. Just sit silently. Don't do anything. And the grass grows by itself. You need not bother about it. Everything will happen. You just sit silently. Enjoy silence. The man said, can you give it a name? Because people will be asking me, what are you doing? So he wrote on the sand with his finger, meditation. The man said, this is too sad an answer. Be a little more elaborate. The master wrote in big letters, meditation. The man said, but these are simply big letters. You are writing the same thing. The old master said, if I say more than that, then it will be wrong. If you can understand, then just do what I have told to you, and you will know. And that's my answer too. Each individual has to become a meditator, a silent watcher, so that he can discover himself. And this discovery is going to change everything around him. And if we can change many people through meditation, we can create a new world. Many people have been hoping for centuries for a new world, but they had no idea how to create it. I am giving you the exact science how to create it. Meditation is the name of the science. Okay, that's